Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, through her childhood experiences, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. Now, today we're going to be setting the stage for our conversations over the next 6 months, which will center around the amazing fact that both mainstream science and mainstream Christianity have been leading us astray. We all know that there can be just one reality, right? There isn't a scientific reality and then somewhere else, or maybe in the same place, a separate spiritual reality. That's obvious. And it turns out now to be a fact that both science and Christianity are just plain wrong about what reality is and what's going on. But thanks to people we used to think were dead, now at last you and I can figure out most things on our own. And you'll see that the genuine truth is beyond glorious. This is a gigantic topic. It really is going to take us every bit of the next 6 months to really begin to make sense of it all. But by the end of that time, you are going to be more of an expert on our one reality than any modern scientist ever could be. I promise you that. Of course, the first thing you're kind of wondering about is, who is this woman and how can she say such things? So I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself. I'm a business attorney, a wife of 44 years, a mother, a grandmother, and perfectly boring. I have had the most wonderfully boring life you can imagine, except that when I was 8 years old, I woke up in the middle of the night and I knew there was no God. Little Christian child, I was terrified. And in the middle of my room, there was a flash of white light, and a voice said, "You wouldn't know what it is to have me unless you knew what it is to be without me. I will never leave you again." Of course, when you're 8, everything surprises you, right? So nothing really surprises you. I thought at the time, oh, that's handy. If you forget there's a God, they'll remind you. And I went back to sleep. But it's in the nature of these experiences that they stay in our mind forever. That was more than 60 years ago. To this day, it feels as if it only just happened last night. And I thought, since it happened to me, it must be what happens to everybody. I expected to learn about it in school, in sundry school, maybe from my parents. You know how it is. You sort of learn the facts of life. You learn how to drive a car. You learn what happens if you forget there's a God. It didn't occur to me, really, until I was ready to go to college, that I never had learned it. And it was still a present experience for me. So I went to one of the best colleges in the country. And when I was there, I chose to major in early Christian history, of all things. All I thought was that by the time you get to college, if you've never learned about it sooner, you're going to learn then what happens without, you know, having to ask anybody about it. What happens if you forget there's a God? Again, I never asked a question. All that time, I never got an answer. And by the time I was 20, I was pretty discouraged. I came home from my summer job one night in August. I was 20 years old, just about to turn 21, very, very discouraged. And in the middle of the room, there was a flash of white light, and the same voice said, "I will never leave you." This time there was music with it. So that was what really got me, because it had happened when I was a kid, but that was a long time ago. It happened again when I was an adult, virtually. And that's what set me on the course of my life. I had to find out where that had come from. I knew it was real. It had happened to me. It was real. So in my 20s, I began a search that continued and has continued for almost 50 years. I wanted to know where the dead are. I figured that was where all of that had come from. And so, as I say, I began that search. And it wasn't until 1975 that we began to get really good information for lay people. This information had been around for 100 years, but we didn't begin to find out about it on the public level until the wonderful Dr. Raymond Moody published Life After Life, in which he coined the term near-death experience. And that kind of opened the floodgates of interest in what happens at and after death. So we began to get good books. And one of the greatest things about books is that they all contain, the good ones, contain bibliographies, right? So I would read a book, and then I would read everything I could find that interested me in the bibliography, and then read another book and the same. And I did this for decades. What I discovered is that we have almost 200 years of abundant and consistent communications from people we used to think were dead. That's amazing by itself. And the heyday, by the way, was in the almost the end of the 19th century and the first maybe third of the 20th century. What's amazing is out of hundreds and hundreds of communications that I read, most were received in southern England and in the eastern United States. Every single one of them was consistent with every single other one. I say in my book, The Fun of Dying, that it was like reading hundreds of communications from people who had all been to Fiji. You're going to go to Fiji one day. You'd kind of like to know what it's like there. So you read a whole lot of, you know, tips for travelers. They all had been to the same place. It was the same process, the same physics, the same, you know, what happens immediately death, soon after death, how you get there, what it's like to arrive, what judgment is like, what the pastimes are, what the people are wearing. Every little detail was the same. I never saw any two that I thought were copied at all. And again, they came like a flash, many of them at once in two different parts of the world. So they could not be so consistent unless it was real, real. So by the time I was in my 40s, I knew that we survive our deaths. I knew it's easy to, and we all survive our deaths, and we all are infinitely loved. I knew all of this so early in my life. But of course, it led me to a crisis of faith. I'm going to talk today about the afterlife evidence, about how science is so screwed up and why, and also about what Christianity gets wrong, which is essentially everything. The dead tell us that there's no anthropomorphic God at all. The Christian God that judges us doesn't exist. There's no Satan. There's no judgment that's permanent and puts us in a fiery hell. There's no judgment by any religious figure. Not God, not Jesus, not anyone. They don't judge us. We judge ourselves. This is what they all tell us. And because that's true, the death of Jesus on the cross has never made a difference afterlife for a single human being. Now, for someone who has been the world's most ardent Christian, I was a Protestant till my marriage, converted to Catholicism because of my husband, became the most ardent Catholic you can possibly imagine. I was a lector, taught Sunday school. I was big into Christianity. So all of this led in my early 50s to a crisis of faith, which made me put aside my Bible for a couple of years. This was a difficult thing for me because I had spent decades reading the Bible cover to cover repeatedly. I've read it 6 to 8 times. I've read the New Testament twice as many times. And so I knew the Bible really well. Now, I thought, even in the midst of my crisis, that I think Jesus told us a lot of this stuff. But it was 2 years before I dusted off my Bible, picked it up on a rainy Saturday and read it. And what I learned then was the greatest discovery of my life. Jesus told us things 2,000 years ago about God, reality, death, the afterlife, and the meaning and purpose of our lives we could not have confirmed until the dead started talking to us too. But here's the thing. All of these people that we used to think were dead are trying to help us, and they're trying to help us for a reason, which is extremely important. As you're going to learn in coming weeks, spiritual energy is the only energy that is powerful and that really ultimately exists. Everything else is an artifact of it. I'm going to tell you in the third segment what God is, and you're going to learn that what Jesus said was true. God is spirit. But because it's powerful and because our minds are part of God, we can choose negativity as well as positivity. That's part of the plan when we come here. We need to have a choice, or of course, you can't grow spiritually if all you're doing is plodding along, not making choices. Too many people, though, in the past 100, 150 years have chosen wrong. And as a result, this world is on a course to disaster. The reason I'm speaking to you today is that I want you to understand what is at stake, and I want you to learn enough so you can help to save the world. If you're a Christian, Jesus is asking you to do this. If you want nothing to do with Christianity, and believe me, I understand why you'd feel this way, just think of it as something that you can do for the world that is also going to make you very happy. But that's what we'll be talking about a bit later. Let's talk a little bit more about what the dead are telling us now. Look, people who were dying, and this the heyday was early part of 20th century, people who were dying back then were talking to us through what are called deep trance mediums, most of them. Deep trance mediums are very advanced mediums. They're not like the psychic mediums that we are really most of what we have today. But they could withdraw from their bodies, and their own spirit guides could speak using their vocal cords. This was a much better system for communication than what we have now, which is essentially mind reading with the dead. There are very excellent mediums. If you want a recommendation, Suzanne Wilson, the Carefree Medium in Carefree, Arizona, is the only one that I work with. And I think she's absolutely brilliant and her connection is pure. But there are many good mediums now. However, back then, the what they had was a great advantage. They had these wonderful deep trance mediums. And so the person who was dead, had recently usually died, could talk to his relatives in the room, either directly using the medium's vocal cords or by whispering right in the ear of the medium who was the guide who was talking through the medium's vocal cords. And it was just much better. You'd get detailed communications. I remember one crusty guy who, when he finally got to take over, he said, "Well, of course you can't find the will. Who put the will on top of all the clothing on top of my will in the bottom left drawer? For heaven's sake, no wonder you never found it. You never will." Well, they went. They looked in the bottom left drawer under all his underwear that had been put on top of it, and there was his will. That kind of thing happened all the time back then. The dead became so frustrated that the scientists were ignoring what they were doing that they started to come up with tests for themselves. The most interesting, I thought, was book tests. They would say to the living researcher who was there with the medium in the room, they would say, go to X Street. This was, by the way, mostly done in London. Go to X Street and X House, and on the second floor, to the left, behind the door, in the bookcase, second shelf down, fourth book in, open it, and on page 27, you'll find this. So the researcher would write it down and mail it, post it, they said then, to the British Society for Psychical Research. And then, only then, would he go and check. And he asked the householder, "Do you mind if I go look in this upstairs room? Here's why." And he would go and he would open that book. And he said the dead were right 95% of the time. We have no idea how they read closed books, but they did it over and over again. There are books, dusty books, old books, full of these book tests that were almost always successful. Charles Drayton Thomas, who was working with Gladys Osborne Leonard, a very, very good deep trance medium, says that the few times they were wrong, he thinks were his mistakes. He had misheard the directions from the dead because they happened. They were so perfectly done every time. The dead were always right. So you'd think that probably at that point, the scientists would have paid attention, right? Well, no. I'm going to tell you in the next segment what happened, which actually is pretty tragic, but tragic for you and me, and especially tragic for anyone who has a degree in science and is trying to make a living with it now. But let's talk about the other evidence that we have of what the dead are telling us. The core comes, as I say, from these dead communicators. And this continues to this day, by the way. We continue. I just only a couple of years ago learned, for example, that one of the highest levels of reality, and I'll be talking in a couple of weeks about how this is all structured, I thought eventually it became non-physical. But someone who lives there tells me that, no, it's all physical. And that's exciting. I'll talk about that in a couple of weeks. But in point of fact, here we have this core of information from the dead, but until the early part of the 20th century, we really couldn't make sense of it because the physics of the greater reality was so different from the physics we're used to here. Then finally, in the early part of this century, we began to get excellent Quantum Physics for Dummies books, and that was when we were able to really figure it out. The physics of most of reality is consciousness-based. This universe is perhaps 5 or 10% of what exists, we estimate. The rest of it is all consciousness-based. And so living in the afterlife, as you'll see in a couple of weeks, is very different and actually much more wonderful than it is to live here. When we put together what we learned from quantum physics experiments, and when we put together with what we learned from consciousness experiments, and so many other bits that science shares with us, and then we put on top of that the fact that Jesus told us many things 2,000 years ago that we can now confirm, we come up with a certainty that all of this is real. This is the greatest discovery in all of human history, and its implications are profound and glorious for you in particular. I hope from this day forward, you will never again forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You're that by definition, and you are loved more than you can imagine. Now, we're going to take another break. After that, we're going to take first science and then Christianity to the woodshed. This is long overdue, but I do it with love. I mean, once we fix both, then both of them will be on the glorious right track, and we can all work together to save our reality. It may shock you to learn that actually mainstream science has been clueless for the past 100 years about what actually is going on. And I can back that statement up. What happened was 100 years ago, as we were getting all those good communications from people we used to think were dead through deep trance mediums, the poor scientists were having a crisis. Their crisis was brought on by Max Planck and his friends who discovered quantum mechanics, quantum physics. If you're not into, say, quantum mechanics, I'm not sure what the difference is. I don't think there is one. But what was discovered over 100 years ago now was that everything, essentially, that the materialist scientists had always been confident about since, you know, Sir Isaac Newton, was not quite right. So they were dealing with that. They didn't want also to have to deal with figuring out whether the dead are real. So what they did then, and this was probably around 1910, and yes, you can find these words in print back then. They're too sophisticated to say it now. But the gatekeepers, those who run the scientific departments in universities, those who run the peer-reviewed journals, decided that they were going to have a fundamental dogma of physics, which is materialism. That was the moment when science jumped the shark. I love that term. Jumped the shark, went off the rails, into the weeds. The reason was this. Anything with a dogma is a belief system by definition. If you don't believe that dogma, you can't play. And the problem with that dogma was that it was more wrong than wrong. It was actually entirely, completely, utterly wrong-headed, because it turns out there is no such thing as matter. So when you base science on materialism, you really have a problem. It's like telling people to figure out what's going on in a room. Why do we have this puddle on the floor? And, you know, you can look down, study those walls as much as you want, but you're not allowed to look up. You can't look at the whole problem. That's what happened. So how can I say that nothing is material? Well, I don't have the ability to say it or the right to say it, but there are some people who do. Let's listen to a couple of them. First, let's listen to Max Planck. Max Planck got the 1918 Nobel Prize for as the father of quantum mechanics. So we know that he knows what he's talking about. He said in 1944, as a man who has devoted his whole life to the most clear-headed science, to the study of matter, I can tell you as a result of my research about atoms this much. There is no matter as such. All matter originates and exists only by virtue of a force that brings the particles of an atom to vibration and holds this most minute solar system of the atom together. We must assume behind this force the existence of a conscious and intelligent mind. This mind is the matrix of all matter. That's pretty clear, don't you think? Now, I can't find it actually in my pile of stuff. Who is it that says pile of stuff? I can't find it right now, but Einstein said the same. Oh, okay, here it is. Einstein said, and he won, by the way, the 1921 Nobel Prize. He was right behind Max Planck. He said, concerning matter, we have been all wrong. What we have called matter is energy, whose vibration has been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. You can quote Albert Einstein as saying there is no matter. And he said that, you know, more than half a century ago, and yet still scientists plod along. There was a rather strange symposium held, I think it was in 2014 or 20, maybe even last summer. Scientists got together to worry about this, and here was their problem. They've been calling the most minute parts of matter, quote matter, subatomic particles. Particles. Well, the problem is that now they understood there's no such thing as a particle. They're all just vortices of energy, very tiny. So what do you do about that? And the question the symposium brought up and talked about was, can we still call them particles if they're only energy? My understanding is that they came out of it saying, yeah, we can still call them particles. I don't know why they decided that. Maybe it was nostalgia. I have no idea. But there's nothing solid. That's why they needed to spend $1 billion on the Great Hadron Collider and try to find the Higgs boson, because the Higgs boson had been posited as a way to give energy its mass. They say they've found it, but now they don't, last time I looked, they don't know what to do with it. And I think that that's kind of what's going on with science. There are all these little bits of things that they don't understand. To this day, nearly all practicing scientists are stuck in a belief system that has devolved into what is essentially the religion of atheism. Some scientists, of course, do believe in God, but they're not allowed by university departments and peer-reviewed journals to let their beliefs or their interest in finding God affect their scientific work. And this is true even though the scientists themselves know now that there is no such thing as matter, which makes the situation even more ridiculous. Today, scientists are coming up repeatedly against mysteries the dead could help them solve if only science would abandon its stupid scientific dogma of materialism. I'm going to cite you just a few examples. Evidence that afterlife researchers are developing helps us propose good explanations for things like dark matter and dark energy, the Big Bang, the finely tuned cosmological constants that keep this universe stable and are supposed to be constant, but actually keep continuously adjusting, the source and the nature of human consciousness, and whether or not we have free will, and we do, but it's just not as simple as scientists think. Those are just a few examples of the ways that the evidence of the greater reality that is now being developed by afterlife researchers could be of genuine help to scientists. Of course, they're making the same mistake they made 100 years ago, aren't they? What they're saying is, we don't want to look at that now. We have our hands full figuring out why we can't figure anything out. So just as they did when they first began to get good communications from the dead in the early part of the 20th century, now, in the early part of the 20th century, 21st century, they still are doing the same thing. They're making the same foolish mistake. They're holding to materialism. They're holding to the notion that somehow they can figure it out without knowing all the truth. That's sad. It's tragic. And today, I'm extending a hand to anybody who's a scientist who wants our help, because believe me, the help is going to make all the difference. I have been a devoted Christian for most of my life. Nobody has been more Christian than I. And today, I can no longer call myself a Christian, but I am more devoted to Jesus than I ever have been in my life. What I have come to understand now is that the religion that I still love so much, I can sing so many hymns, you wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't like to hear me sing them, but I can. The religion I still love so much is wrong. It's just wrong. We now know from nearly 200 years of abundant and consistent afterlife communications that the judgmental Christian God that comes from the Old Testament, made in our image, wears a beard, is cranky, that God does not exist. There is no Satan. And it's actually the physics of the afterlife makes it impossible for there ever to be a powerful entity set in opposition to God. Can't exist. There's a lot of evil. And that evil seems to have largely been created by human minds. And that's kind of an embarrassing fact. But once we straighten out humanity, there won't be any more. There's no fiery hell. There's no eternal damnation. There's no judgment by anyone but ourselves. And I'm going to show you in a later hour that Jesus told us all of this stuff. We just didn't listen to him. It's right in the Gospels. Why does nobody actually read the Gospels? What may be most important to Christians who cling to that get-out-of-hell-free card is that we now know that the death of Jesus on the cross has never made an afterlife difference for a single human being. However, there certainly is a God. We've discovered God. Actually, Max Planck discovered God, and we've confirmed what both he and Jesus tell us about God. The genuine God is nothing like the Christian God. It's an energy-like potentiality without size, without form, infinitely powerful, alive in the sense that your mind is alive because your mind is part of God, and highly emotional. God is, in fact, what you and I refer to and try to understand as consciousness. All our minds are part of God. Inextricably, you're not a dot on God. You are part of God right now. Consciousness can express in a range of vibrations from the lowest, which is fear, and fear's correlates, like anger and hatred and grief and all kinds of emotional pain. And that's the lowest. It also expresses up to the highest possible range, which is infinite love. I think you're going to guess what I'm going to say next. At its source, which is actually what God is, the consciousness energy that is God is only perfect love. It is that simple, and it's just that wonderful. It is beginning to seem certain now that the only thing that exists is what we talk about as God. And if you don't like my using the term God, if it makes you sort of be afraid, please understand that you're going to get used to. I went through a period when I called God mind, capital M. That was Max Planck's term. But God is God. I feel comfortable now knowing that God, the genuine God, is nothing like the Christian God. I think you'll get there too. God is the only thing that exists. That energy-like potentiality is of no size or infinite size. Everything that we think of as real is part of that mind, and that includes the less than 5% of reality that even the scientists know is all that they're studying, the matter part, and the more than 95%, which is everything else, dark matter and dark energy. We'll talk about those in another segment or another time. It encompasses all of it. Most of reality is not this world. Most of reality, or this universe, most of reality is much more complex. It includes many other universes. And if you wonder whether there are extraterrestrials, oh yeah, baby, there are extraterrestrials. This is one of the many things I didn't like to think about. So I've only lately begun to allow myself to think about it and to look at the evidence. But yeah, we're not alone in the universe. In one way, though, we are alone in the universe. And that way is simple. It's all part of God. Every extraterrestrial is also part of that same infinitely powerful consciousness energy, which is the only thing that exists. So in a sense, we are part of them and they are part of us. You are part of me. I'm part of you. All of us are one being. And that being expresses what it's properly expressing as infinite love. Or if you don't like the term love, there are people for whom that's an embarrassing thing to say. Think of it as consciousness's affinity for itself. We're going to explore all of this over the next 6 months. I have expert guests lined up who are going to help you understand what we're learning. This is a whole science which, you know, you and I are only beginning to understand and beginning to come to, but there are people who have done very much work in this field. Now, if you're a Christian, you may recognize that Jesus told us a lot of this in the Gospels. If you don't, then please pick up your Bible and read the Gospels again, because he did. I'm going to tell you something wonderful if you're a Christian. The dead now tell us that 2,000 years ago, God came to us in the person of Jesus to do something big, to free us from religious superstition so we could at last begin to relate to our source on our own. We had come to the point where we were sophisticated enough 2,000 years ago to begin to understand what God actually is. Jesus came to tell us that, and Jesus, they tell us, was God on earth. This is a very big deal. And we only can confirm it now by means of the afterlife evidence and what the dead tell us. We can confirm that Jesus told us things 2,000 years ago about God, reality, death, the afterlife, and the meaning and purpose of our lives that we could not have confirmed until we began to get good communications from the dead 2,000 years later. Stop and think about what that means. People want Jesus to come back. Well, he's doing that. He's saying, you didn't listen to me the first time, but you're more sophisticated now and you can understand what's real. So I wondered when I started reading the afterlife evidence, why it suddenly began at the very end of the 19th century and why it continues. Why is God letting us know now what's going on? It was easier maybe to keep us in ignorance. And yet now they're anybody can figure it out who does the research. Why? Well, the reason is simple, so that we can use what the dead are telling us now to confirm what Jesus told us 2,000 years ago, and to then use that those facts, what Jesus told us, to start to save the world. You'll be amazed how this works. Next week, our guest is Dr. R. Craig Hogan, who is the leading expert on what is actually going on in the world. The fact that you haven't heard from him is in by itself a tragedy, but you're going to hear from him next week. We're going to be talking about what reality actually is, how it's structured, how we know it, and what it means. I think you're going to love Craig. He's one of my dearest friends. Of course, this week you've been listening to someone who still can't believe that this is what I'm supposed to be doing now, but I know with every beat of my heart that it's what I'm supposed to be doing now. I've had quite a voyage. I'll share more of that with you perhaps in coming weeks, but none of this is about me. It's all about you. It's all about what you need to know and the fact that you're really being betrayed by those institutions you most trust, both science and religion. They're being betrayed not out of evil, but more out of ignorance. Our job is to help them gently and lovingly come to the truth, help them open their minds and hearts to the facts that we're now being given. Everything is God. Nothing is not God. That doesn't mean the Christians have won. And by the way, that's why science is so adamant about materialism. They're still fighting this war that goes back to Plato and Aristotle, you know, between materialism and spiritualism. And they never the twain shall meet. That's what science is all about. They can't stand the thought that Christianity might win. And Christianity, of course, isn't winning. What Christianity has done is to put the teachings of Jesus, which are eternal, God-given truth, into a first-century Jewish sect and made them stay there for 2,000 years. Well, the great thing is, as you'll hear in a later podcast, a later conversation, almost said podcast, because these are podcasts too, by the way. You'll be able to find them and listen to them later if you want to think about them. But we'll be talking later about the fact that Christianity did us a great service, actually, 2,000 years ago when it was packaged as a first century religion and sort of stayed there, because we wouldn't have the teachings of Jesus now, which we need so desperately, if they hadn't been packaged in the religion. I mean, that was a wonderful thing that Paul did. He gave us an incomparable gift, but it's a gift. We've been playing with the wrapping. It's going to be time now for us to open the gift and look at what it actually is, and it's those incomparably precious gospel teachings. But that's all conversations for another day. I want to give you a little housekeeping detail. If you feel moved and to ask questions or to disagree with me, I'm going to be happy to take your calls in the last part of any hour at 855-856-1380. And it's fine to disagree with me. In fact, maybe it's even better if you want to clarify a point or tell me I'm wrong, that's fine. And if you're Christian and it would make you feel better to tell me I'm going to hell, I don't mind that at all. I only ask that you treat both yourself and me with respect. If anybody shows anger or a negative emotion, I'm going to dump that caller for your sake. As you'll learn in the coming weeks, what is causing the increased problems of the world is, in fact, that we've become, largely because science and Christianity have been leading us so far astray, we've become an earth flooded with low energy vibrations, consciousness energy that is so negative that we are beginning to slide into chaos. You can see it. If you're at my age and you look around and you remember the world of the 50s and 60s, you can see how far we've sunk. And this, they tell us, is only the beginning. Too many people have for too long been making fearful and unloving choices. We're going to talk in coming weeks about how you and I can be of help to the dead experts who are now working very hard to raise this planet's consciousness. But meanwhile, if you're going to be a negative caller, I'm not going to let you make our problem, which is already horrendous, even worse. Today, you've just been listening to me. I've been talking about sort of trying to set the table for this banquet of information that I'll be giving you over the next 6 months. We've been talking about what's really wrong with both science and both and Christianity, just preliminarily. I'll be doing whole segments, whole shows on each of them to help you better understand how we maybe can fix them. A friend of mine said, well, you don't like Christians much, you don't like Jews much when you say all the things you say in your book, Liberating Jesus. But that's not true at all. I love Jews. I love Christians. I love you. Out of love, I'm telling you, we have a problem we need to work together to fix. And those who are most devoted to God, those who are most devoted to Jesus, are the best positioned to do what has to be done now to save the world from the chaos into which it's sliding. It does no good for us to sugarcoat facts that are totally unpalatable. And frankly, to sugarcoat the fact that what we're doing now is all wrong. It's time for us, you and I, to stand up and fix it, and that we can do. As I said, Craig Hogan will be with us next week. On the 16th, I'm going to be talking about death and the afterlife. It's going to be another table-setting conversation in which I'll tell you what the afterlife experts have learned and what we continue to learn about what actually is going on, especially with reference to what death is and where the dead are now. I think that that's going to be a great comfort to many people because science has made us terrified about the possibility that we'll die and blink out like a light. That cannot happen. It's impossible. And of course, Christianity has made us terrified that if we don't guess the right denomination, should it be Baptist? Should it be Catholic? Is there another one? Maybe I should be Muslim, Mormon, who knows? Religions have terrified us that if we guess wrong, we're going to hell. That's not true either. There is no fiery hell. There is no judgment by anyone but yourself. There are some facts that we sort of guess from the afterlife evidence, but one that I can tell you that nobody guesses at because there's no evidence against it. One is that you are a powerful eternal being. There is no possible way, no way that you ever, ever can die. And you are loved more than you can possibly imagine. Claim that and own that. That's the most important thing I'll tell you today. You cannot imagine how infinitely you're loved. You are God's best beloved child. You in particular, yes, you are God's best beloved child. Claim and know that from now on, because that's going to allow you to free yourself from the fears, which are just low energy consciousness and negativity. And then you'll be able to free yourself enough to begin to join with us and help us save the world. You should know that my nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, Flying High in Spirit, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and soon The Fun of Growing Forever. It'll be out in the summer of 2016. And my website is robertagrimes.com. You might like to know that past episodes of Seek Reality, dating back as far as the summer of 2013, are available for free on iTunes. So if you want to sort of read ahead, you can just go back to those episodes. And we we'll have different guests now, some of them than we had then. And I've learned more in the past 3 years. So we'll be more sophisticated and cutting edge on these broadcasts. But the truth is the truth. The more times you hear it, the more times you're going to internalize and believe it. The problem is you've been so conditioned by science and by Christianity to believe things that are not true that you're going to have to do a little mental surgery on yourself and really steep yourself in the truth before you internalize it and make it part of your heart. And so the more you learn about this, the better. All of my books have bibliographies, by the way, some 70 books that I can personally recommend in all the different areas we talk about. And if you can't afford a book, then just send me an email and I'll send you the bibliography. Of course, if you ever lose track of where I'm broadcasting, because I tend to move around some, just go to robertagrimes.com. If you want to contact me, there's a box there on robertagrimes.com. It'll just send me an email and I'll answer you. I write a blog. I hope you'll read my blog. I have a lot of fun with it, and we get quite a lot of comments now. There's one older blog post that is about what happens to pets when they die, and I should just tell you, it has like, I think, 50-some-odd comments from people. It's now being found by Google, and I love that. If you have any question, if anything is troubling you, I will try very hard to answer your questions. I used to say, if you don't hear within 24 hours, send flowers. But I get so many questions now and comments that it takes me 2 or 3 days sometimes to answer. And that being the case, I'll do the best I can. But for now, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future, in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.